Hey, what's going on? This is the Educated Guest Podcast. I'm Justin, your host. Hey, if this is your very first time listening, I just want to say thank you for tuning in. And you might be asking, like, what is this? And on every single episode and every single lecture, I offer a brief little synopsis of what this is. And it goes something like this. You know, this is a virtual art school. And like any academic institution, we have a set of core beliefs. And then we also have a method of transferring and teaching information. So our core beliefs sort of coalesce around this central idea of the multidisciplinarian, the liberal artist, the person with a wide array of interests, yet a frustration of breaking through into fulfillment in their career and in their life, and to live sort of a holistic approach through their craft, through the practice of their craft. And we argue frequently that this sort of person is going to be the most important, quote unquote, creative of the future. Why? Because the act of creating will be so commoditized, we believe, that the new form of creativity, and it's already here, will be this ability to think, act, and advise others in thinking systemically, and to have sort of a holistic approach to beauty, to form, to function, and to actually stimulate and support widespread change. So our method of teaching this information, right, is pretty simple, pretty straightforward. We have three core messages we try to get across. One, we teach the development of the mind to withstand all of the ups and downs of the emotional journey that is the artist's way, the artist's journey. The second one is about the tactics, the how-tos that comes on Wednesdays. And then the third one is to provide a survey of case studies and anecdotal information on how things are actually implemented in practice. So if you're trying to start a studio, if you're trying to reach your sort of dream job, something that helps you bring your whole self to work, and or if you're trying to truly, you know, launch a product or build a brand of your own, you know, this is the place for you. So today we're actually covering this topic of the burden of your gift. And I find this particularly interesting because a lot of people who listen to this show, and at this point we average roughly 1,500 to 2,500, depending on the month. So let's just say split the difference. We average about 2,000 downloads per month. So out of those 2,000 people, I would argue that 80% of them are very, very talented in one particular respect. And then there's this 20% that have a wide array of interests, and they're trying to figure it out and all this other stuff. And the problem with this idea of having a gift and having gifts, many gifts, is that frequently life becomes burdensome. And more often than we wish to admit, this burden, even with a clear mind, full heart, and fearless attitude, you know, sort of the ritual mechanics of life as an artist, of someone that possesses some unique skill that people have probably told you, hey, you're really good at this, or you've told yourself, hey, I think I'm really good at this, but I don't know if I'm really good enough to really make money. Maybe the ritual mechanics of life can cause us to lose this sense of enchantment, like this love, this desire we once had with the very talent, craft, or skill we claim to love. You know, so after practicing your art or craft for a long time, if you're anything like me, after you've practiced for a long time, most people lose interest in their projects. It surprises them at first. And then then the thing they once loved has become boring all of a sudden. Like, how could that happen? How could, you know, playing guitar become boring to you? You vividly remember when you first figured out how to play your first song. And how could producing music become boring to you? How could graphic design become boring to you? How could architecture and the study of history of arts bore you? How could curation bore you? And most people take this as a sign to quit or accept something as, quote unquote, not being meant to be. But I'm here to tell you today that the good news I have to share is that There's a different way of doing things that doesn't involve this internal shift of projects, careers, jobs, romantic partners, all the time, just in hopes of finding some sort of quote unquote newness along the way. You know, the more time we spend with our gifts, the excitement of just starting will eventually wear off. It's only a matter of time. And thus begins the act of balancing what I like to call balancing your burden. So for sure, there are times when we must move on to another thing. You know, if there's truly growth on the other side of the change, then by all means, give up on your gift. Move to the next gift. And if you feel particularly called to serve the community through public policy, and it means that you don't do graphic design anymore for a while, then cool, accept that change. You've been called to do something else with your time. But every single person knows the truth of why they stopped doing something. And lying to yourself is the toughest of all things on this earth. Every single person knows the truth of why they stopped doing something. And I'm not here to tell you or judge you or anything like that. This is not the space for that. I'm here to accept the fact that that is true for everyone. Everyone stopped doing something for one reason or another, or they do something for one reason or another, and they know. And they can lie to everyone else, but they can't lie to themselves. So if you're experiencing a notion of boredom in your life right now, I know it's quite a boring time for everyone. I want to offer another way of thinking about gift. Before I do that, I want to start by evaluating what a gift is. A gift is not a special talent. A gift is not a superior creativity, you know, in comparison to someone else's inferior creativity. Like, you don't get a trophy for being more creative than the next person, even though there's a lot of design awards that champion superior creativity over someone else. I wonder what makes the difference between the number 5 or number 55 most creative person in the world versus the number 56 creative person in the world. I kind of wonder what that is. And no disrespect to anyone. I have no idea who the number 55 or 56 is on any given list. So no disrespect to the person. It's more a curiosity for the parameters that are used to evaluate creativity. To get back on topic, every person on earth has one type of primal gift. And it's a gift of communication. It's not a subjective thing like, oh, I have the gift of beauty, or I have the gift of this, I have the gift of that. No, those aren't primal gifts. You know, if you were to look at a nursery in a hospital full of babies, newborns, you're not evaluating those babies on the ability to look beautiful. You're evaluating the babies probably not at all. But you start to recognize the moments of beauty in the child rearing years as the moments of the first word. Think about that. Like this moment of the first utterance of speech, whatever the language is, you notice that, wow, that baby's gift has been recognized, because without the ability to communicate in the very first form that most people understand, the verbal form, the gift is being shown. So the joy of being a multidisciplinary artist is that you recognize your calling to be bilingual in your expressions of love, truth, and understanding. That's the gift of being a multidisciplinary, a liberal artist. They, you know, someone who can write poetry just as well as they can make music. Someone who can, you know, direct a short film just as well as they can design a poster. And not only they can do it just as well, they're interested in it just as well. Like, the same way, that's why I kind of make note of this bilingual nature or this trilingual nature of speaking. You know, people need various forms of communication to understand a similar feeling and point of love, truth, and understanding. So that's why I often talk about the fact that it doesn't matter whether you are a graphic designer, writer, actor, singer, or dancer. You know, these titles are being commoditized. If you want a writer right now, you can find one on Fiverr, on freelancer.com, on all these different sites, Upwork, TopTal, all these things, you can find a designer. You can find an actor. You can find a singer. You can find a dancer. Yet this commoditized creativity isn't necessarily going to be the future. And all of these uses of movement, manipulation of light frequency or sonic frequency are simply different expressions of the same concept that is truth of love. And as you go about your day, as you go about your week this week, you know, you might be working at an accounting firm and not even in like the creative department at the accounting firm, you are an accountant. But the second that you accept it, like, oh, well, I'm just an accountant, or I'm just working at State Farm, or I'm just doing this retail job, or I'm just, you know, doing this thing over here until I can get over there, you're shortchanging your gift. Because your gift wasn't in the ability to do, you know, to make sales calls for State Farm. Your gift wasn't in the ability to cut hair on the side while you do, while you're trying to actually work on your poetry book or work on your short film. You know, that's not your gift. Your gift isn't in the skill set. Your gift's in the ability to communicate. So focusing on what it is you have to say more than how you say it is almost the most important thing. And back to the baby example, babies, because, you know, they're closest to the center of the universe, if you will. I mean, for me, it's like you're closest to God, but for others, it may be you're closest to nature. You're closest to the primality of life. I don't even know if primality is a word, but the primal nature of life. Then you are sitting here like not knowing even what you're trying to express. You don't know how to, you physically and very realistically, you can't put it into words at age 2. Or age 1, whenever baby starts speaking. You know, you can't put it into words, but you have expression. So you scream, you cry, you poop, you pee, you know, you do whatever you need to do to express until someone comes around and teaches you, quote unquote, how to act. So thus begins the quote unquote acting career, but you've forgotten about what it is you're trying to express and trying to say. And the challenge for most multidisciplinarians is the challenge for most artists in general is the ability to get back to that truest form of expression, to meet the childlike, freedom of expression with the adult ability to articulate that expression into widespread and widely understood terminology. All right. So in closing, before you act on your first impulse to move on from your gift, childhood dream, or adult aspiration, ask yourself a few questions. We've got 3 questions that I want you to ask yourself. Number 1, when I work on my craft, does my energy deplete or increase? Number 2, why does it do one or the other? And number 3, lastly, how could I change my actions of creating so that I fill the cup of others once mine is selfishly full? And these are questions I thought long and hard about, because there are many different questions you can think about when managing your own burden. You can think about questions of selfishness. You can think about questions of, you know, responsibility, of escapism. Like, there's many different themes about why people express and why people gravitate towards art. But all we really have in this world is energy and time. That's all we have. So it's important to note, not react to, you don't have to like get excited once you find out the truth or get, you know, bummed out if you find out it's something you didn't expect, but just note the fact that, hey, when I play piano, my energy is depleting because and as soon as you answer that question, it's like, oh, wow. Like, I noticed that I'm more tired after I play piano than when I started. And maybe it's not such a binary thing. Maybe it's when I paint, I get energized until I realize that it's not everything I thought it was going to be. And then I get depleted of energy. So it's almost like a roller coaster. And that makes me not even want to start next time. So why does it do one or the other? Something like this might be your answer. well, you know, it depletes me of energy because I don't know who I'm painting for. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I don't know who's going to see this. I don't know why I'm doing this in the first place. I don't know if it's good or bad. I don't know. I don't have a sounding board. I don't have money for real paint. I don't have, and you realize the negative spiral you place yourself in and how you turn your gift of expression through paint into a burden of not ever trying. And then lastly, how could you change your actions of creating so that you fill the cup of others? So when you paint, who is that painting for? Of course, you're going to have, you know, every work of art has a selfish desire of expression. Yet I feel like the best art was made for more than one person. It was a public commentary to help others articulate and see things that they know were true, but couldn't say, didn't know how to say, didn't know how to express. That's what the best songs do. That's what the best paintings do. That's what the best films do. They capture memories. They capture feelings. They capture emotions in thin air. So once you arrive at these answers, whatever those are, I think you'll find that your gift will always be staring you in the face as the light that needs to be seen in the world. You know, sometimes the light can be too bright to the face, but the light never goes away, quite honestly. It just never goes away. So you must match this wild energy that making art provides with the strength and clarity of knowing why you make it. I'll say that again. You must match the wild energy that making art provides with the strength and clarity of knowing why you make it. So your artwork is like a wild bull. I like this example just to think about what is going on. It's like your artwork is like a wild bull or a firefly running wild with rage and energy, just light, you know, radiating everywhere. There's plenty of luminosity, but very little direction. And your goal as a professional is to accept this burden of energy that your gift provides and instead see it as a challenge to capture and direct the energy you know your art gives into a direction that is one of service as opposed to one of selfish desire and quick bursts of fulfillment. So I said that last sentence, you know, I know it might sound a little bit complex, but I'll boil it down a little bit more. Your goal is to capture this wildness. You know, we all have moments of wildness. Maybe it's in our teens. Maybe it's in our early 20s. Maybe it's in our, you know, midlife crisis in our 40s, whatever it might be. Where you just are fed up with whatever the system is, whatever the system means to you. It might be school if you're young. It might be school if you're old. It might be job if you're young. It might be job if you're old. It might be parents. Might be grandparents. Might be children. Might be spouse. It doesn't matter. Like the idea of a system isn't the idea of structure. People like structure. It's the idea of constraint. And you're the challenge as an adult artist and as a professional, like I just mentioned, is to learn how to wrestle with that constraint, to rest and to breathe in that constraint and to operate within it and to really, really push your wildness into a place of formality so that it could be readily accepted by more than just you. That's how you move from the burden of doing the work for yourself, from this place of coping into a place of creation. This is the process to overcome the burden of the gift you've been given. That's all I've got for today. Hope you've enjoyed this. We'll speak soon.